Hi, everybody. Katie, alcoholic.
Hey, Katie. Katie.
Didn't Charlie do a wonderful job on one and two? Awesome. Oh, I'm telling you. It changed the dynamics of, you know, when you're working with that new guy, you know, this whole deal is about, I mean, I'd love to say that we're here for ourselves, but we're here so we can learn this information, do the work, and then pass it on, period. It's all about helping the next drunk. And we are firm believers in you've got to take somebody through the work quickly, period. I have no problem saying that. The book talks about getting in touch with this power. I'm not it. I'm merely the vessel that can get you in touch with that power. And so what we think is, and this is just the way I do it and the way Charlie does it, we do steps 1, 2, and 3. We meet with the new guy. Say you see the guy sitting in the meeting. You know, they always say who's under 30 days or whatever. They raise their hand. It is my responsibility to beeline it over there. It's not my responsibility to meet my girlfriend and visit with her and ask her if she's dating anybody and what's going on in your life. It's my responsibility to beeline it over to that person and say, hey, listen, so you're new, yeah. So you got a sponsor? No, perfect. I'll be it. Period. Just like that. It's not this waiting around. You know, people say, well, somebody hasn't ever asked me to sponsor them. When did that become the requirement? When did Bill and Bob wait for the alcoholic to come to them? You know, we are to pass on what's been passed on to us. So you say, well, you know what? I'll do it. Charlie and I believe that the new guy, you know, they don't even know where the restroom is, for God's sakes. That's too big a responsibility to make them wait to find somebody that they can relate to. We're relating to alcoholism, not somebody who's got 3 kids and been married twice. And, you know, I'm not going to be your life coach. My job is to get you in touch with the power that can relieve your obsession and absolutely change your life. So we meet with the guy. I always say guy, meaning woman also. And, you know, we do steps 1, 2, and 3. We line them out on the 4-step. We give them 1 week to have that 4-step written. This nonsense of it takes 3 months to write a 4-step is ridiculous. The 5th step promises say that the drink, the obsession, will be lifted. Why do we not want that? We're dealing with somebody's life here. You know, I don't want to dink around with you. I want to get you in touch with that power so you're not going to drink. And the quicker I get you in touch with that power, the less chance I have of dealing with some silly problems. Are you guys with, you know, the sponsee? God love them, but man, if you don't get them in touch with that power, you become a life coach. You know, they can't make the decision of what time to get up in the morning. Should they have decaf or regular coffee? I don't want to be making, you know, come on. You know, we're going to get you working with somebody as quickly as possible so that you're not sucking the life out of me. And and so that's kind of the way that, you know, we do it. And so then I, you know, depending upon my schedule, I'll either give you a week or 2 weeks to get that inventory done. And then by I send you home to do the rest of the 5th step. You answer the questions in 6. You say the 7th step prayer. You've taken that hour in the 5th step. You write the 8-step list that night straight off of your inventory. And by the next day, we're getting ready to make the amends. So by the time you have 30, 35 days, you're in the amends process. And by 45 days, you're already probably sponsoring. And that is the magic, is to watch that new guy with less than 60 days carrying somebody else through the work. And of course, they're constantly talking to me. Okay, they asked me this question. What do I say now? You know, did I do this right? Okay, I explained the allergy. Da, 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 da. And the new guy sometimes can actually relate more to somebody with 60 days, you know? So that's just, you know, that's the way that Charlie and I like to do it. That's the way that we were taught. And that's the experience that I have of really watching a lot of people remain sober. I mean, we're beyond human aid. I'm not saying I'm that power, but I'm telling you what, I can get you in touch with that power that can relieve that obsession pretty darn quickly. My step is the 3rd step. Once again, Charlie and I both had a strong misunderstanding. I remember at some point in my sobriety, I've been sober 26 years. I remember some point in my sobriety thinking when I saw selfish and self-centered, I thought, you know, I don't think I am. I'm really, that's not my problem, you know. And I remembered thinking the drink was my problem. Now, I know it says in the book the drink was but a symptom, but that's only one line. And if you miss that one line, I really believe the drink was my problem. As a matter of fact, I was fine until that alcohol became a problem. And so what I did is I ran a whole life based on self-will. I didn't grasp that. I didn't understand that. I felt really sorry for you selfish people. But thank God that's not me. I'm really a nice individual. As a matter of fact, I'm really nice sober. And so since I'm sober now, I think I've got it from here. And so let's start on page 60, because you have to follow this line by line. 60 to 63, as Charlie was stating in the first step, we go up to page 24 explaining the allergy. From 24 to 43, it explains the obsession, right? Well, 60 to 63, it goes through several different ways of explaining how self shows up. So it says it, and then it restates it, and then it gives you an idea of what it's going to look like, and then it restates it again, all in three pages. And what's really interesting is it took so long, we drunks have to beat into submission behind the alcohol to believe that we've got a problem. But the self piece is only three pages, really. I mean, it restates it throughout the book over and over and over again. But wait till you see when you really study it, which is why I think it's so crucial to study. The book is spiritual literature, which is designed to be studied, period. It's not designed to be read. It's designed to be studied because it meets you where you are, right? And then all of a sudden you read a line. I mean, how many of y'all have read a line and went, oh, my God, I've never seen that line before? You know, it's taken on all new meaning. That's because it's spiritual literature. So when we start with on page 60, it says the A, B's, and C's, right? And I don't know if you guys do a lot of chanting, but, oh, God almighty, in some states the chanting is just, you just feel like you're sitting around singing Kumbaya, you know what I mean? You know, we heard a comedian, a recovered alcoholic comedian, he says, only drunks would add more to the Lord's Prayer than amen. Amen, and keep coming back. It works because you're worth it, because you're working it, and deep, you know. And
yeah, so we're the only ones that think, I think we could do this a little bit better than Jesus did it.
Yeah. Let's add this whole paragraph afterwards and shake the hands and dance in the circle. And really, the truth is, you know, to some of us, we take it for granted, right? But you got to think of that new guy who goes, who the hell are these people, man? The last thing I want to do is be singing Kumbaya. You know, I knew I'd fallen into some sort of religious cult here, you know. And so, we like to end with amen. You know, that's it. Done deal. But we tend to chant a lot of things. And I think, you know, once again, without having too much opinion on outside issues, I think a lot of that came from the treatment centers. I think the treatment centers all sat around for 28 days, you know, doing a lot of A, B, C, you know, and then they repeat after me. If you've ever been in the treatment centers, you know, to where it gets kind of crazy.
What's the point?
Yeah, the point is.
Anyway.
Okay, back on. We have a little opinion here. So the A, B's, and C's are, the A is the problem, the B is the solution, and the C is the program of action, right? And it says being convinced. Now, right there is a comma. Being convinced of what? That you understand that you've got the problem, you understand that there is a solution, and you understand that there's a program of action, right? It says we were at step three. Now, notice in the book it says we were at step three. It's going to say it twice. So this is the first place it states it, which is that we decided to turn our will and our lives over to God as we understood Him. Just what do we mean by that, and what do we do? Because that particular statement to me is nebulous. Correct word?
Good one.
Big word. Nebulous. I can't wrap my brain around it. I know I got so excited. I could hear me saying that means nymphomaniac or something, wrong terminology, because of my educational background. I'll just stick a word in and think it sounds good. I told Charlie, I said last night, I should have told you guys, my son wanted a sugar glider. It's one of those little squirrels, right? And the guy at the animal store said it is
nocturnal.
Nocturnal, and I thought he meant marsupial.
Marsupial.
Marsupial, which means a pouch. Yeah. The other means doesn't sleep at night. huge difference, people.
Yeah, yeah.
Huge difference. And I told Charlie, I said, it is so amazing what one word can do. It can, the whole understanding of this deal. So this term.
We have squirrels playing all night.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Don't get one. But so this term is too hard for me to wrap my brain around. It says that, you know, we turn our will and our lives over. I don't even know what my will is, guys. I mean, I guarantee if I said write down what turning your will looks like over to God, we'd have several different takes on what this really looks like, what this really means. So it's getting ready to tell me just what do we mean by that and what do we do. Just like alcoholism or just like the drink, they got to come at me in several different ways during 60 to 63 to understand this. It says the first requirement. Well, think about what the first requirement in life is, right? First requirement is you better get out of bed. If you want to live your life, you're going to have to get out of bed. Going to probably take a shower, right? Wouldn't hurt to brush your teeth. There are several requirements just to get the day started. Prayer and meditation would be nice, right? So we understand what a first requirement looks like. So it says the first requirement is that Katie be convinced that any life run on self-will can hardly be a success. I don't know about you guys. I am not convinced of that. Now, I can tell you I'm convinced, but my actions do not prove that at all. Follow me around in a day, and I am not convinced of that statement. So that's what it's getting ready to tell me. It's like, of course we understand you're not convinced. Let me go through these pages and explain to you what that looks like. So on that basis, which means underlying foundation, we're almost always in collision with something or somebody, even though our motives are good. Now, what that means, guys, is how many of y'all would agree that you can go through your day and, you know, your neighbor kind of bugs you. You know, you're not on speaking terms with your neighbor. You were when you first moved in. But then after a little while, well, they just kind of bug me. You know, they don't do their stuff right. They park the car wrong. They run that mower at 7 o'clock on Sunday morning when they should wait till 11. You know, they just start bugging me. Guy that I used to work with that I really used to enjoy visiting with him at the coffee pot, just kind of bugging me. Just bugging me. You know what? He just talks too much. And, you know, I used to enjoy my brother-in-law and he just kind of bugs me now. You know, he just asks too many questions. So you see, now I'm in clue. Then I go to the grocery store and you know what? They have rearranged that goddamn grocery store for the third time. Nobody ran it past me and don't even get me started at the post office. There is not enough people behind that counter at the post office. Are you with me on this? So I'm always in collision with something or somebody. Now, my motives are good. So when I get up to the counter, I feel it necessary that I share with them how they could have done it better. Don't you think? You see your neighbor out there, you say, hey, Bob, thank you for not running that mower at 7 this morning. Little tip there, let him know. That bugs the crap out of me. Just letting you know, okay? See, I'm always keeping my motives good because Bob really shouldn't run that mower at 7 a.m. For God's sakes, I'm helping the neighborhood here. Jesus, just do as I wish. Come on. How difficult is that? But see, it's always going to refer to when my motives are good. Because if you take, I love the way that, if you filter my actions through my delusion and my motives, it's utopia. I think it is, don't you? I've thought this all the way through. I think this is a great plan. Of course, I got half the world pissed off at me. I can't figure out why. I think it looks like a good idea. And remember, the book never refers to denial. Once again, that's another open discussion comment. People say, well, you're in denial. There is no denial to this disease. It's a disease of delusion. It's a disease of perception. You can prove the truth to me, and I still don't believe it. Right? See, that's where I'm like, you know what, when say there's two people talking and you walk up and they look guilty. Well, they were clearly talking about me, right? And I'm like going, what were y'all talking about? Nothing. Uh-huh. Yeah, you were. You're talking about me. Now, I have no idea what they were talking about, and they could swear to God they were talking about something else. But I know they were talking about me. Yeah. You're not going to move me off that mark. Because I have a disease of delusion, and it is factual, and you cannot change my mind. That's why this work, this program of action, is crucial for the alcoholic, because we will never see it from an entirely different angle. We will always see it through our own perception, and our perception is like looking through a straw. It is so narrow-minded because it is constantly about self, and it's going to go more and more into this, right? And it says, so now keep in mind, I'm always in collision with something or somebody, even though my motives are good. Then it talks about most people try to live by self-propulsion. It goes into the actor. We've seen a lot of people go into a lot of 12-step programs, and I'm not knocking that. You know, God dang, that's a hot topic. That's like talking about meds. But we see a lot of people go into other 12-step programs, and Charlie and I believe a lot of that is because they miss the self piece. You know, have you ever had somebody say, well, you're controlling, you need Al-Anon, or you can't get in a good relationship, you need Al-Anon? It's like, well, wait till you hear this line. And I'm not knocking it if that's the avenue you want to go, but keep an open mind to what I'm going to say. Each person's like an actor who wants to run the whole show, is forever trying to arrange the lights, the ballet, the scenery, and the rest of the players. If his arrangements, now let me put this in my perspective. If only Katie's arrangements would stay put, if only people would do as Katie wished, the show would be great. Everybody, including Katie, would be pleased. Mm-hmm. It would be Katie-topia. Mm-hmm. I mean, come on. If you people would just get your script this morning and do as I want you to do, I'd be fine. A lot of people shoot you over the, you know, Al-Anon program, go to a OA, go to, you know, Debtors Anonymous, go to all these other things, which is just another manifestation of self. Alcoholism is my problem. No doubt about it. I'll overspend. I'll oversex. I'll try to run your life. I'll try to run the neighbor's life. I'll try to run my kid's life. I clearly run Charlie's life, if you haven't noticed that. And
best thing ever happened to me.
And he loves it. But you see what I'm saying? And people shoot you to 19 different programs, when in fact it's just for me a manifestation of self. The book says that you will get me in touch with a power that will answer all my problems. Well, this is kind of like, say I'm on a movie set and the director goes, okay, get all the extras in here and you, we want you to stand on the mark. Julia Roberts is going to walk in. She's going to be in a beautiful summer dress. All we want you to do is say, that certainly is a pretty dress. And then she's going to walk on by. Are you with me? I can handle that. So I'm standing on the mark. Director, you know, puts the ear. Action. She walks in. She gets about halfway to you, and you go, whoa, cut, whoa. What? You want me to say that is a pretty dress? Have you seen that dress? Man, and you know what? The lighting on that dress isn't even good. And to be honest with you, the name of this movie sucks. You know? And the director is pulling the, going, who is this guy? Jesus, we just asked him to stand there and say one line. See, that's what we do every day. We walk in and we say, didn't anybody ask me how we needed to set this room up? Didn't anybody ask me how the schedule of this event should be? I mean, come on. Oh, the post office is my favorite. I mean, how many of you guys have gone in there and there's one guy behind the counter and the line's 40 people long and they don't care. They don't care.
Only one person is complaining.
Yeah, the only person in there bitching, I guarantee, is alcoholic. You know what I mean? You could. 19 other people are all quiet, and the alcoholic's going, what the hell, man? They could have four more people back there trying to get a rally going, and everybody's like, who is this guy? Jesus. Chill, buddy. It's the post office, man. It's always been like this. And so you begin to understand the actor trying to run the whole show. That's what I do. Every day, my job is to run the whole show. The traffic should flow differently. Doesn't this idiot here realize this is the fast lane? Get out of it. Blink in your lights. Blink, 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 blink. Come on, wake up, wake up. I'm on your ass. Blink, 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 blink. Yeah. And so then it goes into explaining what the self-will toolkit looks like. And that's the next paragraph after, you know, I'm trying to get everybody to do Katie-topia. And it says, in trying to make these arrangements, our actor may sometimes be quite virtuous. He may be kind, considerate, patient, generous, even modest and self-sacrificing. Now, that certainly sounds like a wonderful character trait, doesn't it? See, the only problem is that's when I have a motive. I will figure out how I need to behave because I am a con artist. I have yet to meet one alcoholic that's not a con artist, right? I don't care if you're quiet and smooth. You're as much a con artist as I am loud and obnoxious, right? It's how is self manifesting. And that's why a lot of people say, well, I'm not like Katie. You know, she's loud and she's this and that. Well, fine. That's how my self manifests. Your self may manifest by being so quiet. You're like smoke in a room until you've figured out how to just, right? Get what you need. And so that sounds like something good, but then if I don't get my way, you can guarantee, on the other hand, I may be mean, egotistical, selfish, and dishonest, right? And one of the things, guys, is I don't even realize I have a motive. It's not like I wake up in the morning going, I'm going to get what I need today. By golly, I'm going to screw everybody at work. And I'm going to, you know, I'm going to get there early and I'm going to eat the best donuts and, you know, nobody's going to get me. Yeah, I'm not doing that. I'm trying to actually be nice in the world. You know, that's the biggest problem is trying to be nice. That's a challenge. See, it's in my DNA. It ain't about me being nice. I guarantee I'm trying to get you to behave the way I want you to, so I can get what I need. And so I don't even know I have a motive until you don't do what I want you to do. And then I'm pissed. And then I've got to go through that active tense step. And that's going to come more and more alive for you. So here it's going to restate exactly what happens when this toolkit of spirit, of self-will kicks in. What usually happens? The show doesn't come off very well. Katie begins to think that life doesn't treat her right. How many of y'all are there? Oh, yeah, absolutely. And you know what? I hope you can admit that, because I'm not saying that you know, we're great spiritual gurus or whatever, but I can tell you on any given day, sometimes I can feel like I've been gypped, you know. And so it says, she decides to exert herself more. She becomes on the next occasion still more demanding or gracious. It's restating that self-will toolkit. See, when I walk in somewhere, I can tell you, and I'll use an AA meeting for a perfect example. How many of y'all have been plenty pissed off at your home group? You can go ahead and say yes. You spiritual giants that are in the room, when this happens to you, it may never, but... okay, plenty pissed off. Old Bob's getting ready to share again. Good God Almighty, I'm going to get a cup of coffee. It's 9:05. He always shares at 9:05, and he holds the meeting hostage for the next 20 minutes with the whining about his, you know, Lexus. Yeah, whatever. But what I'll do is I'll walk in the meeting and I'll size it up. Oh, there's Bob. God Almighty, he's going to share. And then there's Mary over there, and she's, oh, yeah, she's hitting on the new guy. And then there's so-and-so over there, and they're doing it. So, see, I'm judging everything, man. I am sizing up where I want to sit unless I have a regular seat. I'm getting this whole deal set up. I know to be who I need to be nice to, who I just walk past and say nothing. Got nothing for you. Dang sure not going to meet him at the coffee pot. Oh, Bill's at the coffee pot. I'll wait till he walks away. Okay, I can go over there now. Is this sounding familiar? Is that the only way my head works? Okay, so it's telling me right here. It says, on the next occasion, I got to decide how I got to be because I'm running the show, man. I'm scamming everything. Now, I don't know I'm really doing this, but this is just what it looks like. It says, still the play doesn't suit her. Admitting she may be somewhat at fault, she is sure that other people are more to blame. This meeting would really run better if I could get four of these people out of here. Matter of fact, they're probably not even alcoholic, for God's sakes. You know what I mean? I mean, I'm running. I'm deciding if you're alcoholic or not. Yeah. You know, God has anointed me his right-hand person. Now, I love this, too, because it says, admitting she may be somewhat at fault, she's sure others are to blame. How many of you guys have heard this line? And I use it still today. I got to catch myself. My part. Well, I'm gonna own my part. It's all your part. It's all my part. We have to disregard the other person entirely. Because I guarantee if we're looking at my part and we're looking at your part, that's my part. And this is clearly your part. See, and that's where that line comes alive. Yeah. Says, I may be somewhat at fault, but Charlie is way bigger wrong than I am, right?
And I feel like I'm being pretty generous admitting that that little bitty part is mine. And really, all that's going to do is make it more comfortable for you to admit what your part is.
Yeah, you got to come.
Because I've been so gracious to admit my little part here.
So then it says, Katie becomes angry, indignant, and self-pity. My sponsor and I have decided we need to say self-pathetic because self-pity is just so ugly, isn't it? It just, you know, most people would rather say they're depressed, right? No, and don't get me going on the whole depression thing, right? But, you know, it's self-pity. It's me. I mean, if you ask somebody, what's wrong? I just can't see what it's all worth, you know? Woe is me, right? And I'm not knocking if you got a chemical imbalance, but what ends up happening is I'm telling you, in the midst of my untreated alcoholism and my husband was sick, let me tell you, they were throwing pills at me. I was living in the bedevilments, right? And I love it. Just let's flip to them real quick before we get any further. Page 52. You know, we were talking about, Anita, what untreated alcoholism looks like. Second paragraph down says we have to ask ourselves why we shouldn't apply our human problems, right, the same readiness to change our point of view. We were having trouble with personal relationships. Yes, we couldn't control our emotional natures. We were prey to misery and depression. We couldn't make a living. We had a feeling of uselessness. We were full of fear. We were unhappy. We couldn't seem to be of real help to other people. Was not a basic solution of these bedevilments more important? So it goes on, and that's what it's talking about, guys, is when I am in this place, that I can't tell you how much meds they shoved at me. I mean, every time I'd go to the doctor, I was just like, you know, for whatever reason, they'd known my husband had died, and they're, you know, antidepressants. I had 3 full-blown anxiety attacks before Joe died. I'm talking blowing in the bag anxiety attacks. That's what untreated alcoholism did to me. Absolutely. And you know, they were wanting to medicate my children. They just medicate them. I had no idea that these 12 steps, I have never had an anxiety attack since then. So, you know, go figure. But that's my experience, and I'm sticking to it. So she becomes angry, indignant, and self-pity. So what it is, you know, that home group, you know, can you believe that home group? God Almighty, they just piss me off. They never stay on topic. They talk too long. They need a timer. Blah, blah, blah. Indignant for all I've done. I started that meeting, for God's sakes, you know. I've showed up to that meeting. I've made coffee every morning for that meeting. And self-pity. They understood what I've given to that meeting. By God, if anybody understood the pain I'm in. That's repeated over and over and over in our daily lives. Angry, indignant, and self-pity. Yep, and it'll always go that way. It says, what is the basic? Once again, basic means underlying foundation, man. What is the basic trouble? Is Katie really not a self-seeker, even when trying to be kind? I'll start this meeting, but by God, you better run it the way I want you to run it. Now, I'll admit there are no leaders except me. See what I'm saying? So you begin to really, and I'm using an AA meeting because we can all agree on that one, but do you see this at work? You know, I mean, I've been so nice to little Mary over there, and nobody else was being nice to Mary. I was nice to Mary. I heard she just turned on me, bitch. You know what I mean? I mean, whoa, all of a sudden, Mary, I ain't being nice to Mary anymore because she turned on me. Well, it's because I had a motive. You know what I mean? Nobody else was being nice to Mary. I thought I'd be nice to Mary. Mary all of a sudden became kind of a mean person. I don't like Mary anymore. So one of the things is without God's help, I always have a motive. I'm telling you. When it says things in the book, it says, as ex-problem drinkers, our very lives depends upon the constant thought of others. You guys, that is not in my DNA. It absolutely is not. If I think it is, if I think I'm this incredibly wonderful, kind, giving, self-sacrificing individual, I am not. It is in my DNA to think about me. Now, I'm not out to screw you. But I am going to be darn sure I take care of me. and how is this going to benefit me? You remember what I said about my husband? I went and drove that school bus to make sure that we had medical insurance to protect the family, yes? Got to get a cough drop. To protect the family. And then when I found out that Joe had a brain tumor and that I was going to be driving that damn bus, oh, the dynamics of me doing that, self-sacrificing, were not looking so good anymore, were they not? I love my husband. I loved him with all my heart. And I knew I'd have to drive that bus because I got to do it. That's what I'm talking about. Is all I could think about first was me having to drive that damn bus. That's the level of self-centeredness we're talking about here. It's not that I'm a mean person. All I think about is me. I don't think too much of myself. I don't think too little of myself. I just think about me all the time. How is this going to affect me? What's going to happen to me? Well, if so-and-so, if they sell my company, what's going to happen to me? Well, if they buy a new car and it hits our income, what's going to happen to me? What about my car? What am I going to do? What about me? 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 Are y'all with me on that? Oh, yeah. Everything. Oh, yeah. My kids, when my kids are not doing well and they're grown up, they are not coming home. That will affect me. Mm-mm. Go forth. Go forth. I don't care if you're couch surfing, whatever. You are not coming home. You are not coming into my life and affecting me. Now, most people won't be willing to admit that. I can tell you, I am completely transparent with this self piece. I am selfish and self-centered to the core. And without God's help, I am constantly collision with somebody or something, even though my motives are good. And I tell you, I've got a lifetime of experience with it. And so it says, now here's an interesting line. Is he not really a self-seeker even when trying to be kind? It says, is he not a victim of the delusion that he can wrest satisfaction and happiness out of this world if he just manages well? The word victim, guys, means tricked or duped. You're tricked or duped by your own delusion that you can, in fact, rest, which means to seize by force, satisfaction, if you just manage well. Well, let me tell you, when Joe got sick, I was out there managing my butt off. I took on 3 more jobs. I mean, I had told this family together, the day the neurosurgeon said Joe won't work another day in his life, what do? I didn't go crawl in bed. I'm a doer, remember? I'm the chick who left home at 15. The way self manifests for me is get out of my way. I will pile drive through this deal. How many of y'all know that? You threaten or scare me, get out of my way. I'll take it from here. Thank you. I don't need that right now. I got it. I got the torch. I'm at the front of the cave. Follow me. Right? I got good night vision. Come on. Follow me. Follow me. You know, that's the way I operate. People come up to me and go, oh, my God, we're so much alike. It's because we're alcoholic. Right? Alcoholism is what we're relating to here. The way myself manifests is I run the whole show, obviously. So I'm out there trying to manage everything. And let me tell you, I am losing it. I had road rage one day, and all it took was this guy looking at me in a gridlock, tilted his head like he'd won. I'll show you who won, man. I get out of my car. How insane is that? I'm a woman. The truth is I don't know how to fight. My delusion tells me I know how to fight. I'll take you out. I've never really thrown a punch at anybody, but, you know. And so I go over there, and I get the guy. He gets out of his car. Now, he's got his seatbelt on, which was really quite enjoyable, watching him try to get out with his seatbelt on because he's pissed now, right? You know, he's doing this number, and I thought, until he's out. Then I'm in over my head. The statement I say a lot in life. How many of y'all say that one? I am in over my head. Oh, my God. I've either dated the wrong girl. I've taken the wrong job. I've bought something I shouldn't have. I'm in over my head. I blew it again. See, it can show up anyway. Well, by the time this guy gets out, he takes a swing at me, right? I'm backing up. And I realize now, and not to mention he didn't put his car in park, so he rolled and hit the person in front of him, which was... All from a tilt of the head and untreated alcoholism. Thought, oh, you think you won? Crazy.
I'll kill both of us.
That's right. I mean, I really am that crazy. You know, people say they're suicidal. I'm homicidal.
Yeah.
I will shoot you, and then I'll decide if I'm going to shoot myself. But, you know, crazy, crazy, crazy. Well, when he came out and he takes a swing at me, I'm backing up, right? He catches my shoulder. My glasses fly off. We're in front of God and everybody, right? We're in gridlock traffic, for God's sakes. You know, two men jump out. One's got a billy club, thank you, God. And he's got that guy around the throat, which I assume means I get to go in for more argument, right? So he's holding him, and I'm, you know, I'm marching back over there to give him more of my mind. The guy goes, get out of here! You know, I thought, oh, good plan. Good plan. So I get in my car, and I swear it was like the parting of the Red Sea. You know, the cars just kind of move like an ambulance is coming through.
Yeah.
Get this chick out of here.
Let the crazy lady out of here.
Get the crazy lady out. So I'm driving through, and I swear I come past the guy with the guy holding him at the billy club, and I start yelling at him more, you know. And then I get out of there, and that was that moment where I just went, what just happened to me? What just happened to me? That's untreated alcoholism, man. That's insanity. That's somebody who hadn't worked a step. I didn't know where my big book was, guys. I mean, you know, read your big book. I think it's on the shelf. I don't know. That's that. When it says restless, irritable, and discontented.
But she was making 5 meetings a week.
Yes, I was doing 5 meetings a week at a very, very sick meeting that I was a member of. I'm never knocking that. Nobody in that meeting had a solution. As a matter of fact, if you walked in with the solution, go. No, as a matter of fact, we had one guy walk in with his big book. We thought, oh, here it comes. Who's going to run him out of here? I don't know. I can run him out of here. Before you know it, I'll get him out of here. And they head on down the road because they go, oh, man, that place is sick. You know, and it was unfortunate. But now I look back and I see what the damage I was doing. If a newcomer came in there, God bless their soul, ma'am. We had nothing to offer them. We used to talk about how well we were and how sick the rest of AA was. We had no group conscience. See, you can run you a pretty sick AA meeting. You know, people are like, well, I hate to hear anybody knock AA meetings. Oh, I was a member of the sickest group in the world. And today I hear it's turned around. And I knew I wasn't the one to carry that message back in. It's kind of like trying to carry the message to your family. Not a good plan. So, you know, because it'd come off as self-righteous. Oh, Katie's been saved, you know, the born-again Christian. Come in. Holier than now, you know. So, it says, now here's another tricky line. Isn't it evident to all the rest of the players that these are the things that she wants? And do not her actions make each of them wish to retaliate? Yes, I just licked my fingers.
No,
they sucked my fingers. I'm sorry. It's very against Charlie's family rules.
Yeah.
oh boy. I was raised in a barn, obviously, and they were raised in the big house. And do not his actions make each of them wish to retaliate, snatching all they can out of the show? How many of you guys have ever been around that person where you look and you go, oh my God, I mean, they're trying to get everything here. I'm going to go get me some. You're not going to get it all. I'm going to get me some. And so this is the line that my sponsor absolutely loves. Is Katie not, even in her best moments, a producer of confusion rather than harmony? How many of you guys have had somebody's best interest at heart and it doesn't go well and you're standing there going, what? I mean, come on, man. I was just trying to help. And you have produced confusion rather than harmony. I had a buddy of ours is trying to do something really, what looks to be very kind for the family. Now, that always scares me. Because I'm like going, really? That's not my DNA. I'm not showing up for that casting call. I know me. I got a motive. I'm not going to be that self-sacrificing. And I said, really? You don't have a motive here? And then by the time we got through the work, he goes, yeah, I do have a motive. I said, so what are you going to do now? And he goes, well, I'm going to have to back out. And I go, oh, back out. I'm sure the family's going to be shocked, right? Because now you're a producer of confusion rather than harmony. You showed up as the knight in shining armor to pull this family together when you really have a motive behind this deal if everybody doesn't behave the way you want them to. And you're going to back out of this deal and everybody's going to go, what the hell? I thought this was your plan in the first place. Can you see the producer of confusion rather than harmony? And here's the deal. I don't know what he's going to do because he's made such a mess of this thing that there is no good way out. How many of y'all know that one? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No friendly direction.
No friendly direction. That is a producer of confusion rather than harmony. And so that's what it's talking about. Well, then it talks about this whole next paragraph is just about a hypocrite. You know, the safe cracker, the, you know, basting in the Florida sun, all that. That's just that hypocrite. We alcoholics are the most hypocritical people. See, I want mercy for me and justice for you, right? When I screw up, come on, guys. I mean, didn't you see? I told you I hadn't had much sleep. I know I probably shouldn't have said that, but I mean, I really didn't mean that. And, you know, can you just forgive me? But now if you do it, we need to write a page in the front page of the paper. We need to go ahead and put a newsletter out, maybe a memo in the office about how badly you screwed up. See, that's how we operate. Well, then here is the most important page. And this page, when my husband died, I didn't get this sponsor for about 18 months after my husband died. She knew of the situation of Joe. He was sick for 6 years. And for y'all that missed it, my husband died of a heroin overdose at 23 years sober. He did not die from the brain tumor, which is very, very important piece of this story. So I'm telling Marty, my sponsor, she's a woman. I said, Marty, I'm just heartbroken. You know, Joe's gone. I can't seem to get my life together. I don't want to water a plant. I don't care about anything now. He's been gone 18 months, right? You can get a lot of sympathy out of death. And I'm not downplaying that by any stretch. But I'm telling Marty all about this, and I hadn't found my big book or looked where my big book was. I knew it was on a shelf, but I hadn't touched it in years. And she said, you know, Katie, I want you to read page 60 to 63. And I thought, you know what, God bless her. That's probably the part of the book that talks about those that have had it harder than others. And, you know, that we need to just take better care of them, and that's where the AA community really supports you. And I'm sure that's what it is. And so I flip the page open to page 62, and forgive me, I do try not to cuss, but this is so powerful. I flip open to page 62, and the first line I read is, selfishness and self-centered, that we think is the root of our troubles. And I swear, I thought, did that bitch not hear a word I said? Oh, my God. How can she say, does she not get the pain I'm in? When I called her back, which was immediate, she said, Katie, there's a fine line between sorrow and self-pity. And I believe you've gone into self-pity. I'm sorry that Joe died, but you can't touch you. You cannot touch you because of your loss. Do you guys know what I'm talking about? My loss is greater than anybody's loss, so you can't touch me. And I've built that wall around me that you absolutely cannot make me okay. So when it says selfishness and self-centered, now this paragraph is a very powerful paragraph because of the way it's written. That we think is the root of our troubles. So we're talking about, you could look at this two different ways. You could look at the root of a tree. If I told you, go out there and get rid of that tree right there. You went out and cut that tree down. It'd be a lot of work, but you could cut a tree down in a short period of time, right? But I said, oh, no, I said get rid of the tree. Oh, well, Katie, that's going to change the whole dynamics. Man, that's the whole root system and everything. I mean, that we're going to have to bring in a special tool, and that's going to take quite a bit longer. That's what we're talking about. Most people just trim the branches, myself included. We don't ever get down to the root of our troubles, which is that selfishness and self-centeredness. How many of y'all have heard this a lot where people say they're working on their character defects? The book tells me I cannot work on my character defects. That means I'm going to go into that self-will toolkit. I'm going to try to be kind when in my head I'm sitting there thinking that you're, you know, whatever. I'm like, sure, fine, I'll help you, loser. Watch. Or if envy is my favorite, say there's somebody I really don't like, I've been trying to be nice to you, and then I find out you lose your job, and I think, ha, good. Now they'll know the pain I'm in, right? Those kind of statements. See, those kind of statements, that's my DNA. That voice in my head, that's what we're talking about. That's the level of self-centeredness we're carrying around, guys. That's what I didn't realize that God can not only take most of that away, but he can get me to have a toolkit to where that doesn't, I go to compassion. When you lose your job, even though I don't like you, I really feel sorry for you. Glenn and I had a really nice conversation this morning about somebody, and he had held a resentment to somebody, and then he found out this person wasn't doing well at all physically, and he was really, really scared. And at one point, he turned around to give it the, oh, my God, you know? See, we're going to go into this work. I got to understand what I'm looking for. That's what 60 to 63 is. The knowledge of what 60 to 63 will have no permanent effect. Doing the third step prayer will have no permanent effect if less at once followed by a strenuous effort to face and be rid of these things. But I got to know what I'm looking for. I've got to be able to be transparent enough to say, you guys, if you had a microphone on this head, I'd be embarrassed for you to hear what I'm thinking. All I got to do is look at you. You know, what were they thinking wearing that today? Good God, did they brush their hair? I mean, come on. You know what I mean? I mean, have you ever had somebody look at you and go, huh, the heck was that? What? You know, or you could be sitting there talking to somebody. They rub their nose nine times. You're like, do I have a booger? I mean, what is up? Surely you're trying to tell me something. You know, that's what I'm talking about. This thing will make me crazy. How many of you laid your head down last night and it wouldn't shut up? Talk, 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 and just shut up there. I'm so sick of me. This is what this is talking about. Now, this is how it shows up. It says, I am driven by 100 forms of fear, comma, self-delusion, comma, self-seeking, comma, and self-pity, comma. Still an ongoing sentence. We step on the toes of our fellows, and they retaliate. So what you're telling me, it could have said driven by 1,000 forms of fear. Remember, guys, this fear is what I call self-centered fear. I'm afraid I'm not going to get what I think I need, and I'm going to lose what I got. I have completely painted myself in a corner that I absolutely am deathly afraid of. Here's a perfect example. When Joe got sick, I took out a life insurance policy on him because I knew he didn't have a life-threatening illness, but I just had a gut feeling he wasn't going to live to be an 80-year-old man. And I had the family, I had financial, and remember, I'm a doer, man. I'm going to protect myself. So I took out this very expensive life insurance policy because it was a universal or whatever. Well, Joe died within 6 weeks of its 2-year probation period, which they protect themselves from suicide and whatever. That's what insurance companies do. So even if he'd had a car wreck, they would have put it in a investigative state. So he died 6 weeks before of a heroin overdose. Well, then they start really, you know how insurance companies can make you crazy. They start really getting picky, and it looks like I'm not going to get this insurance policy, and by God, I need this. I got a kid in college. I've got my career. There is no way I can make ends meet financially. And remember, I have no education. I'm not going to go out there and land some management position because I'm a fitness professional, right? I am not going to be able to make the dollars I need. I need this life insurance money. I'm laying in bed. My eyes are opening with the Four Horsemen. How many of y'all know that one? 3 o'clock in the morning, pink, you know, just... You know, that is untreated alcoholism. I have not experienced that feeling since I've been connected to this power. Now, that doesn't mean I hadn't been scared. That doesn't mean I haven't gone through some dark times. But I have not ever experienced the Four Horsemen with me. And so I am freaking out. Well, all of a sudden, it takes about 6 weeks. I finally find out I'm going to get the check. The day the check comes in the mail. Now, I'm still not completely free to this fear till the check is in my hands, right? Are you with me on that? Especially an insurance company. I open that check. I see the dollar figure is what I expected. And I go into instant fear that I'm going to spend every penny of that money because I'm irresponsible with cash. So I have switched from deathly afraid of not getting it to I can't keep it because I know me. It never changed hands. See, I'd love to say, well, did you give it to somebody? I'm not releasing it, guys. I don't have the power. Charlie kept saying, give it to me. Are you out of your mind? And then be responsible to ask him that I want to go buy, you know, $500 worth of clothes? Forget it. I am 50 years old. I don't need nobody. You are not the boss of me. How many of y'all have said that one?
Yeah.
You're not the boss of me. I'm all of 12 now, buddy. Get out my way. And what did I do? I spent that money in 1 year. Every penny of it. My fear came true. I knew I wouldn't be able to. I'm irresponsible with cash, man. I'm not going to save it. Now, some people may say that's a cop out. Well, that's really telling you the truth. At that point, I was incapable. That's what self-centered fear looks like. That's what this is talking about. When I'm driven by that fear, guys, I'm not choosing to behave this way. I'm not going to miraculously become an incredible person with my cash. I'm not going to go to a class and understand how to do finances better. Can you help me here? I know me. And so Mark used to say when you're driven, it would be like getting in a car, a limousine, and the driver saying, today, we're going to be driven by fear. What did he say?
Hi, my name's Fear. I'll be driving you today.
Yes.
You won't have to make any decisions. I'll make all your decisions for you.
And I've always used...
Fear puts on the cap, and here we go.
I've always used the example of women know this one, and Charlie said men don't know this one as well as women, but have you ever been in a car, and you get in a big old fight, and you want out of that car now? And I mean, you're willing to risk, if they don't pull over, jumping out of that car. And I mean, oh, yeah, see, and I love that laugh. That one, I've been there. And it's like, pull this car over. I want out now. I got to get out of my skin. And Charlie's like, I'm not pulling over. It's like, then I'll jump. You know what I mean? And then you kind of make that little racket with the door. Oh, come on. I'm not in the PTA, am I? Yeah. And you make that little racket with the door, right? At that point, I'm actually considering jumping. Now, and it wasn't a physical argument. Nobody was hurting me, but that's what driven does to me. I'm not choosing to behave this way, but you need to pull this car over because I need to just get out of my own skin. That's the insanity this is talking about, guys. So when a sponsee comes to you and they're losing it, you lob out a little, let it go, accept your situation. You want to grab them by the shirt cuff and go, did you not hear what I'm saying? I am driven. If a mere code of morals or better philosophy were enough to take care of alcoholism, we would have been fine a long time ago. You got to get me to see it from an entirely different angle, man. You got to make my problems of my own making. Don't you lob out a slogan when my head's going to blow off. I'm over here homicidal, and a slogan ain't doing it. And see, that's where what it's kind of like, and don't get me wrong, those slogans are priceless. They absolutely are wonderful. But that's like having the promises, working the promises, expecting the steps to come true. I'm not there, man. Take me through the program of action so I can have this relief. And so it says that this fear drives us into a delusion, right? Now, delusion is reading minds. How many of y'all have sat there? My sponsor gave me a trick, and she said, not a trick, she gave me a test, and she said, Katie, the next time you and Charlie are talking, and you think you know what he's thinking, I want you to ask him, what are you thinking? You know, because I know what he's thinking. Because, you know, I read minds. Are y'all mind readers? Absolutely. I'm. And I swear he'd look at me and he'd go, I'm not even thinking. What? It's like, what were you just thinking? Katie, I wasn't even thinking. I mean, like, you had nothing up there? Just.
Tell me yesterday when you thought the kids were dying. And.
Oh, yeah, he gets a phone call yesterday, and I hear him go, what? And he pauses. I have got his mother has just passed away. Maybe it's Sadie. Grace is in trouble. And then all of a sudden I hear him go, a 30-foot net? I'm like, oh, my God, that's a business call? I mean, I went 9 miles down the road. My son has had a heck of a time keeping a job. But, boy, interviews great, man. He can get a job. He just can't keep it. Are you with me on that? The boy can interview. And I come into this place of business that he's at in this grocery store, and I see him in the back, and this man's talking. This man's waving his hands and waving his hands, and my son's spinning an apple. He works in the produce section. He's spinning the apple, and And I'm thinking, oh, my God, he's getting fired. I know he is. He's getting fired right here, right now. And the guy's waving his hands and waving his hands, waving his hands. And I've left, you know, gone to the meat department. And, you know, he's going to try to come move back home. My biggest fear. I have raised my children, and you are to go forth. You are not. I know up here in the Northeast, you guys let your kids come back forever. We do not do that in Texas. You go forth, man. Mama loves you, but head on down the road. And so, I mean, I finally come back, and Sam's out there, you know, stacking the apples. I go, Sam, what? I just saw you over there. What's going on? He goes, about what, Mom? I said, oh, my God, I saw the guy waving his hands. And I said, did you get fired? And he goes, he wouldn't get fired. That's his little pep rally talk in the morning. See where I went? The guy's little pep rally talk. Rah, rah, sell those apples. Come on, come on, come on, come on. And I see it, and I immediately size it up because I have a delusional mind that's always driven by fear that my son is coming back home. Are you with me on that? Now, that may sound heartless to a lot of y'all, but trust me, our children do not need to be living with us. Yes? Say yes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I got an eye on it. Yeah, because you know why? Because they need to get their life. They need to get their self-esteem. They need, it's actually, if your kids come back to live with you, it's selfish on your part for letting that happen. Because they need to have the responsibility that you're keeping them from having because you're afraid of what they're going to do. Right? Don't even get me started on the whole parenting thing. My oldest is 32. I have been around a while. And so this is what I believe when this continues to go into this. So I believe a delusional lie. When it talks about dishonesty in the book, we all know that we're not supposed to flat out lie. Right? Are you with me on that one? I mean, right when I come into AA, I try to quit lying, cheating, and stealing. Those are the three things I think I should get a crown for. Well, the second part is not telling the whole truth, right? Of being dishonest. The third part is believing a delusional lie. I'm telling you what, with that inventory process, most all of us love our parents deeply, right? But who's the first two people on an inventory? Mom and Dad. Now, I may not have been the best parent in the whole wide world. I may have done exactly what my parents did, but I can't believe they did it to me. I may have done it to my children. See, mercy for me, justice for them. I believe a delusional lie that I should be forgiven, but they should be held accountable. And that's what we're really going to get into in this four step. And so then it says self-seeking. Now, self-seeking is an action step. Self loves knowledge. How many of y'all have ever broke up with somebody and you got to talk to about 80 people about it? They'll go, how you doing? Oh, not well. Me and Jimmy broke up. Really? What happened? Oh, I was hoping you'd ask. Well, and then we're going to go into this long discussion, and then I'm going to hear your 2 cents worth and hope that you're taking my side, right? Because I got to figure out how to wrap my brain around this breakup. Or if you lost a job, hey, how you doing? Not good. What's wrong? Lost my job. What happened? Oh, hope you asked. You know what I mean? Because I need to talk about it. Self needs a level of knowledge that is, it'll kill us because it never fixes it. It's the power. We're looking for the power to make us okay. And so how many of you guys have seen somebody and you tell yourself, I'm not going to mention this. You know, I know this isn't a good idea to say this to you because it's just not a good idea. It's got a motive and I really want to know how your girlfriend's doing. And I know you guys broke up, but you may not be willing to talk to me about whatever. And then you go up to him and you still say it anyway, right? Or Charlie and I'm not going to ask him this question. I'm not going to ask him about so-and-so because I know it's going to end in a bad conversation. And then I creatively figure out how to lob it in there sideways. Are y'all with me? See, I'm always self-seeking. I'm a self-seeker even when trying to be kind because he needs to mention it so he can hear my wisdom on how to fix it because I've got all the power. Don't y'all agree that you've got the wisdom that could help everyone live a better life? See, and that's an amazing delusion that I have. Now,
even though I don't have a long track record of making brilliant decisions, I still think I know what everybody else ought to do.
Absolutely. Yeah. Now, another one of self-seeking, and this is really becoming an epidemic proportions, is snooping on Facebook. Oh, my God. I mean, when did that become okay? I don't do Facebook, but I mean, my sponsees, I'm like, for God's sake, stop looking at their Facebook. And they can't stop. and they're finding out what they're doing and who they're talking to and what was that conversation about.
She updated her status as single.
Uh-huh. There you have it. You know, and I mean, you when it says driven by fear, oh my God. I mean, that's the most dangerous thing. And if I tell my sponsees, stop looking at their Facebook, they do not have the power to not look at it. It's not an update. It's driven by 100 forms of fear. It's the fear that I can't make good on that promise without God's power. See? I mean, any of you guys, you can be looking in somebody else's email. You could be looking in somebody else's phone. They walk out of the room and you scan their text real quick. It's because you're driven by fear. You can't not pick that phone up. And if I come to you with some lame thing that says, stop doing that. Oh, yeah, right. Sure, that ought to work well. You know, I'm going to have to get you to do the action steps so that we can get you in touch with the power that can keep me from picking that phone up. And so then the revenge is another means of self-seeking. Oh, my gosh. I mean, I love the line in the book where it says, the victor only seems to win at war. I mean, especially some of us have justifiably been done wrong. Yes? And there's no doubt about it. You know, Charlie and I had a dandy of a fight. And he came to me and he was like, Katie, you did nothing wrong. Well, I knew that. At this particular fight, I knew that. I did nothing wrong, but I was embarrassed in front of somebody else. Da, 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 da. Well, I wanted him to pay for how badly I was embarrassed in front of those other people. And I mean to tell you, when I called the other person that had been in the vehicle, they said, Katie, you are feeding a beast that needs to be starved. You're going to blow your entire marriage behind being right. And you're right. I'm here to tell you, you're right. But you're going to make him pay so badly. And I'm going to be standing there on top of the mountain, maybe one arm missing. A lot of bloody bodies. My God, I was right. Didn't I tell you people I was right? I knew I was right. Ha, ha, ha. Yeah, we got a divorce. But I was right. Yeah. we had a good thing. And I was right. Yeah, keep listening to me. I was right. You see what I'm saying? I mean, we will blow it up. And that's a dangerous place to be. Then, of course, we go to self-pity, self-pathetic. Self-pity, to me, is like putting Elmer's glue on your arm and then somebody giving me a Kleenex and trying to wipe it off. You know what I mean? You just make a bigger mess behind self-pity. I'd rather have self-righteous. Self-righteous, I can clean the house. How many of y'all been mad and you just, I mean, you get that toothbrush out, you know, you are cleaning it up. But self-pity is, I've been in bed for 3 days, man. I can't move. Somebody says, how you doing? I'm not doing good. I call it the Eeyore syndrome. Well, I've lost my tail again. Anybody know where my tail is? Thought I had it earlier. Gone again. You know what I mean? And I mean, that's self-pity. And I'll tell you what, here's another way of looking at self-pity that I've been working on with my sponsor. And I told her, I said, I don't know what's going on, Marty. I mean, this is happening after A, B, and C. What is it? She goes, well, Katie, it's self-pity. It's like, it is not self-pity. And it is. And what self-pity is manifesting for me is I've had it harder than anybody else. You know what? I left home at 15. My mother died when I was young. If you knew how hard I had it, you'd get how much more difficult this program is for me than it is for you who still have your mom alive and your sister and you are close. And you see what I'm saying? Now that's the self-pity shows up everywhere. You know what I mean? I spend too much money. Self-pity. Well, then you need to do some work on that. You need to take some action steps to get down to what it is that sets you up to be this failure. You know, I can't ever have a relationship. How about that one? I can't, you know what, I have no luck in having relationships. I'm glad you're happy. You know, oh yeah, and how many of y'all that are single make darn sure that you don't want to hear all this happiness horse shit, right? Yeah, in your marriage. Oh, I'm real glad you're happy. Okay, I'm over it. Or someone who's married and not happy in their marriage, right? Yeah, well, you just wait. That's always my favorite line. You just wait. Yeah, yeah. Somebody's got a small little child. They're so proud of it. And you go, yeah, just wait till they're a teenager. Yeah. See how self-pity's everywhere? That's a new form that I'm looking at. And so, and I'll tell you, the only thing that works for me, when I'm in that level of self-pity, is throwing myself knee-deep in with my sponsees. The only thing that works. The book says, working with others, it works when everything else fails. It works when talking to my sponsor doesn't work. It works when prayer and meditation, forget it. I'm in self-pity. There's no prayer and meditation. You know what I mean? I can't shut this squirrel cage up at all. So I go in. Charlie and I were having we were struggling one weekend, and he was going somewhere on business. And I remembered thinking, I'm setting myself up to sit in this house miserable. I know me, right? So I set 3 fifth steps up that weekend. I mean, I'm calling my sponsor. You got that fifth step written? Yes, I do. Okay, we're meeting from 12 to 4, and then I'm taking about a 2-hour break, and then Mary's coming over. I'm doing it till midnight that night. I mean, I set myself up with fifth steps like you wouldn't believe, and that was the greatest weekend I'd ever had. I mean, you talk about God. See, God works through you guys to get to me. And Charlie came home, and he knew I was upset. I mean, he came home, I'm like, hi, honey. Oh, my God. Am I walking into a trap? What is she doing? She's kind of freaking me out. She was hating on me when I was leaving. You know what I mean? And I mean, that is that when it says an entire psychic change, that's what we're talking about. Service work. And I'm talking working with others, service work. Now, I'm not saying making coffee's not bad, but let me tell you, that weekend, coffee would not have done it. I needed to get knee deep and sitting down, eyeball to eyeball with you and talking about you. Get me out of me. I'm sick of me. I got too much of me between me and God. And remember, I can see self-centeredness, guys, in you long before I see it in me. Oh, my gosh. As a matter of fact, your level of self-centeredness is blinding. Are you with me in that? Blinding. Now, I can't see it in me. I can sit there and tell a sponsee exactly their level of self-centeredness, and then I have a problem, call my sponsor, and she brings me to the exact page and the exact situation I just told you. Now, how did that happen? How can I see it in you and am blinded to it in me? And so that's why this rest of this just is so beautiful. It says, when we step on the toes of our fellows and they retaliate, oh, yeah. Sometimes they hurt us, seeming without provocation. But we always, or excuse me, invariably find that at some time in the past, I made a decision based on self, which later placed me in a position to be hurt. I decided that I was going to do this, and now you're upset with me. Or you've hurt me. Yeah, I've got an eye on it. And so, it says, so our troubles, we think, are basically of our own making. That is a promise right there, guys. If I want to be free, the problem has got to be me. It cannot be Charlie. I absolutely have no luck at getting Charlie to behave the way I want him to behave, right? The problem has got to be me. So it says they arise out of ourself, and the alcoholic is an extreme example of self-will run riot, comma, though he usually doesn't think so. Talk about a delusion right there. See, how many of you guys go, well, I'm not an extreme example. Of course you're not, because you usually don't think so. Let me follow you around for one day, and I'll point out every ounce of defect of self-centeredness. And trust me, I can see it clearly in you, right? And when it talks about a riot, it's not like two guys fighting. I mean, you guys watched the thing in Egypt on TV. Those riots were scary. You didn't know where anything was coming. That's what we are through this life. We're going through life. An extreme example of self-will run riot. Now listen to these two things. It says, and there often seems no way of entirely getting rid of self without his aid. Many of us had moral and philosophical convictions galore, but we could not live up to them even though we would have liked to. When I was drinking, I began to chip away at my moral values, right? How many of y'all know I won't ever sleep with a married man? I won't ever sleep with a married woman. I'll never steal from my mother's purse. I'll never leave my children unattended, be it whatever it is, right? Your moral clock starts to go down. Well, morally, I can't even live up to these things. I'd love to say if my children need me, I am there for them. Oh, let me tell you, if I got a better offer, I really don't want to be there. Now, I will, but it's not in my DNA. This event was supposed to be in July, right? We had to switch it to February because we have 2 grandbabies too. I love my grandchildren. I love them dearly. I'd give them a kidney if they need one. But if they could hold that birth off just a little while till I could do the Wilson House, I would really appreciate that. Are you with me on that? Because, see, I want to do the Wilson House. See, moral and fil- now what I'd do is I'd get on that plane and I'd fly out where those babies are, and I'd be mad as hell at Charlie because he'd stay here because he's the boy. And they got to have the mom. Once again, self-pity. Mom always has to do everything. Are you with me on that? So, I mean, that's the truth. And so I told Charlie, I don't care. We're switching it to February, period. I'm not going through that stress. So then it says, neither could we reduce our self-centeredness. I got an eye, too, on the clock, Glenn. It says, neither could we reduce our self-centeredness much by wishing or trying on our own power. Right there it tells you, you cannot work on your character defects. Now, we can try. I got to tell you, I got a short fuse. I go to FU on line three. I really do. I'm not proud of this, but it is who I am. I'm very spicy. I think we figured that out. My nickname is Scrappy. And if you want to bring it, bring it. You know, bring it. Bring all your stuff. But Charlie is a diplomat. He does a lot of discussing. And I go to FU on line three. So he tries to get me out of the way as quickly as possible because he knows I'm going to be remorseful and regretful that I did that. And so, you know, we kind of work good in that area. But the truth is I cannot work on these defects of character. They are something that must go, you know, that God has got to remove these. It says this is the how and why of it. Now, here are the terms, guys, and then we're going to wrap this up. The terms are crucial because this is an agreement we're making before we start the work. I got to know what I'm looking for before I start the agreement. Yes? So it says we have to quit playing God. That's the first part of the deal. Well, that's once again, that's nebulous. I don't really get that. It says it didn't work. So then it's going to talk about God is the director. He is the principal. I am his agent. I like to do the father-child because I have kids. I know I would sacrifice my life for my children, right? Wouldn't you guys? Absolutely. If both my kids needed a kidney, we'd celebrate the end of Katie's life tonight. My children are taking my kidneys. I'm done, right? I mean, I love my children. That's how much God loves me. He is going to make sure I'm taken care of. So on the top of page 63, it says, when we sincerely took such a position, what position is that? That I'm going to quit playing God. All sorts of remarkable things followed. We had a new employer being all powerful. He provided what we needed if we kept close to him and performed his work well. The two things, in order to keep close to him, I must do 4 through 9. I must get unblocked and clear the debris because God is within us. I have to stay in the maintenance steps of 10 and 11, and it says, and perform his work well, I must take care of his children and do the 12th step. So you see what the agreement is I got to get unblocked, stay in the disciplines, and take care of his children. And it says, established on such a footing, we became less interested in ourselves, and then there's the third step, promises. I hope that helped you guys. We're going to break for lunch.
Thanks, Katie. Mm-hmm.